So I'm Pascal. I'm representing Art of VFX, this blog where we try to unveil the artist's range of emotions throughout the VFX process. So Thad, thanks for joining us. You're with us today as visual effects supervisor for Digital Domain on G.I. Joe 2: Retaliation. So briefly, Thad, who are you? What's your background? I've seen you in this industry for quite a while now.
I started doing computer graphics when I was 18 years old at New York Institute of Technology Computer Graphics Lab. It was the forefront of computer graphics in the late 70s with Ed Catmull and Albie Ray Smith and all the guys from the University of Utah. I spent the first 10 years of my career doing research in computer graphics, trying to build an infrastructure for it so we could do animation and visual effects, and then went to PDI, and then founded my own company, Hammerhead. So yeah, I've been doing this for 30 some years, and it's been a great run.
Okay, great. So now you're at Digital Domain, and so if we jump right into the show, how did Digital Domain got involved on this show? Was it early on, or was it?
Yeah, actually, I'm not with Digital Domain anymore, but this was certainly done there. We got involved with G.I. Joe like we do all projects. The studio we're putting the show out there because who wants to build this project? We had a good relationship with them before, and they, we know the people at Paramount, and they said, do you want to bid on this? And we bid on. They gave us the whole project to bid on, and we bid on everything. Really tried hard to get it. It was, looked like a nice fit with our schedule and nice fit with the kind of work we do. So
it worked
out. We tried really hard, and we got the word of a significant part of the show, which was great fun.
Okay, we'll come back to the details. But how was the collaboration with director John Chu, which is very young? Towards visual effects, was he okay working with visual effects?
Yeah, he's great. Now, John Chu had done mostly dance movies before, and so this was very new for him.
Yeah.
He had a visual effects supervisor working for him, James Madigan, working on the production. And James was a perfect partner for John because James is extremely detail-oriented and extremely good at planning shots and organizing things and presenting pre-bids to the director to show him different alternatives, and was just a tireless worker on presenting alternatives. I mean, for instance, on the big tank battle at the end of near the end of G.I. Joe Retaliation.
Yeah.
James presented over 50 different pre-bids of that sequence to the director before they finally settled on something they liked. And so where John haven't had a lot of experience with it, he had a great, like all good directors, but what makes a good director is somebody who can assemble a good team. Now the director presents the vision, and the team create, implement that vision. And it worked out really well.
Hey.
So when we worked with the director, he was very good at giving us artistic input and telling us what he wanted. He worked through James Madigan to say, how we're going to achieve that vision. And it was a good partnership. In particular, sometimes you get this loop where you satisfy the tech supervisor and he can't satisfy the director.
Yeah.
That never happened. James always knew exactly what the director wanted and always directed us very well.
Excellent. Wow. So I'd like to focus on the creative steps from the birth, the genesis of a shot from the words on paper as a script, and what goes into your mind, and very much the first few steps, which are very, very hard and very painful, but very creative also. So I hear you've done on this show several sequences. So the weaponized motorcycle, can you mention more? The satellite,
yeah. Okay. Well, the motorcycle's a great case for that. know, the script, as you say, the motorcycle leaps off a ramp and then breaks into pieces, and those pieces turn into rockets, and they fly toward the prison and explode.
Yeah, so when you hear this, when you read these words, you're like, okay, motorcycle, splitting, transitioning, actor transition, do we need a CG double? At first, it feels kind of obvious what you need to do, or you see the steps clearly, but then what happened? Did it really happen as clearly as you thought it would, or?
Well, in some ways it did. In some ways it didn't. We, for instance, when we thought about this, we thought that the pieces of the motorcycle would transform more than they did. So the engine block is a very heavy piece of machinery, and so as it broke apart, we had wings pop out, which helped support it as it flew toward the prison. We thought that was pretty cool, that the pieces transformed quite a bit on their way. But, in the end, the director did it like that. He thought it should stay more a motorcycle and less fantastical. And a lot of this movie is that way, in contrast to G.I. Joe 1. In G.I. Joe 2, there was unbelievable magic. It's all much more rooted in reality. And so, that's the case where we had to learn that as we went on, to see what the goal of this movie was. So very grounded reality. What they did for that shot was they actually filmed the motorcycle going over a small jump to give us some ground truth to begin our work with. It was like, okay, we'll go with that. and then they shot the explosion at the end that we had to merge into. So those were our end points, and we had to do everything to fill them in between.
Were you on set for these frequencies or not? You received the material afterwards.
I wasn't personally on set for that. I sent my set supervisor, Jeff Baldwin, to do that. And Jeff is great. One thing that Digital Domain prides itself on is capturing everything possible on a set. So he brought back hundreds of pictures of the motorcycle, of the set, of the light environment. So he would take high-dynamic range panoramas at every point along the motorcycle's trip, for instance, in the lighting that was shot at. And Jeff was extraordinarily thorough without, at the same time, holding up production very much. So that's the feeling half of it. You have to get everything you can, but you can't slow down the production.
Yeah, exactly.
The idea of making it as grounded reality as possible led to a conversation between me and the visual effects supervisor for the show to really try to match the light of the real motorcycle as closely as possible and to make it look as much like the real thing as possible. So we spent hours going through every frame of the real motorcycle driving through the scene to see how the lighting kicked off of every surface on the bike and trying to match that as where the real motorcycle was damaged and had bent panels, light to wash across those flaws in the real one. You had to match that in the CG one to try to bring out that grit, that reality, that earthiness to it. This is much more than G.I. Joe 1. This is a very grounded movie. Another example of that is, for instance, is the sequence of there's a ice toward the end of the movie. All these missiles are flying, and then they're all destroyed in flight. They're self-destructive.
Yes.
That was a case where they gave us very little work time. It was just the words. Nothing was shot. It's a complete CG animation shot. And for that, nobody's ever seen this before. Nobody's ever seen missiles like this blow up in space in flight.
Yeah.
No camera crew. But there is some reference of solid rockets exploding. And so I was able to go with that, and I I showed those examples to the director. He got very excited, thought that looked great. So we built a simulation that, you know, simulated that. And the interesting thing is that all the photographs of rockets exploding are pretty much right where they're taking off from a launch pad in Earth's atmosphere, you know, so. Well, how would it be different in space? And it's really different in space. You know, when you have an explosion in space, there's no air to slow down the explosion, so things just keep moving out very quickly.
Yeah.
Also, when a solid rocket explodes, you end up with thousands of pieces of solid fuel that are each burning independently as they fly apart. So it was a nice combination of sort of artistic work plus some research into the physics. And then, you know, try to find a way to simulate that in a computer in a finite amount of time. And we were right at the limits of here's all of those things. That the simulation of the explosion was by far the largest gas simulation that DD had ever taken on. Every step along the way, all the early simulations, the low-res simulations looked pretty good. And, the very first time we did the full-res simulation, everybody thought it was just spectacular, exactly what they wanted.
Excellent.
So it worked out really well.
How long this will take to do this sequence? Because I wonder if you do you sleep at night when you're reading these words on paper and you're like, oh my.
Yeah, well, you can sleep when the movie's over. it was a challenge, and I guess I was a little unprepared for how large a computational challenge it was, effects animator, Jeremy Hampton, just took up all the corners and, you know, did not cut any corners and just did it right. Toward the end of that project, we were pretty burned out, and, you know, Shorty, the director, just we don't keep our eyes open. And he immediately tweets that, you know, this simulation has a billion voxels. Whoa! He
just
all his fans. That made us feel good. Like, okay, that's worth it.
Excellent.
Well, the director, John Chu, is amazingly
expressive.
Fun to work with. He's very, always excited, always enthusiastic, always has, you know, he isn't bound to any previous idea. When you see something, he reacts to it. And if he likes it, you know. If he doesn't like it, he'll tell you. And it was a real joy to work with.
Yeah, excellent. Well, if we jump on another little piece of words on paper, like the nanomites, you're like, oh, the president is gonna change. There's a morph thing. So everybody thinks we can do this photographically, and then what happened? Of course, it's different when people see the first test, isn't it?
Well. You know, this is an interesting debate that happened. They really wanted everybody to see that it wasn't a morph, they really wanted it to be as physical, again, as grounded, as physical, as real as somebody transforming from one person to another can be. So they did not want to shoot it as two pieces of film that could be merged together. They really wanted it to look like some physical transformation was happening. Now, got a lot of morphs in my day, and you can do very realistic looking morphs, but the production really was very emphatic from the day that they didn't want that. They wanted it to be a true simulation. So DD has a lot of experience doing synthetic humans, before that, we did obviously work on Benjamin Button, which was tremendous, and then on Tron, we did a lot of digital humans with a lot of very large range of expressions. So we have the tools to do it, and one of the real challenges is that that the character he transforms into, the Zartan character, which is the impersonator who is behind all this, he only shows up in the movie for about 6 seconds. Where he transforms in the first scene, and then when he dies at the end. So the only time we get to see him are those very, very few seconds. So we have to make sure that when he does the transition, it looks exactly like him. And there's no question in your mind that's who it is. Mm-hmm. We spent quite a bit of time going down a wrong path, unfortunately, where we were trying to mimic the expressions of the actor who plays Zartan, Arnold Oslow. So it transformed from the Price's expressions to Arnold's expressions and back. And it never flowed well. It just didn't work. You know, you saw it made the two of them too alien from each other. It made it look almost like you're wiping from one actor to another.
Mm-hmm.
About two-thirds of the way through the project, we said, well, let's just try to mimic John the Price's expressions in Arnold Oslo's head. And all of a sudden, it came alive. It looked like the same person doing that transformation, but he was just a different person underneath.
Mm-hmm.
So that was a big change that really made the project sort of come alive and start to work. But it was still a tremendous challenge, even though we had perfect reference photography of Arnold in the set, in the right lighting, going through big facial transformations. It's hard. On a movie like Tron or Benjamin Button, you have hundreds of shots through which to develop and amortize that cost of building the character. And
yeah.
G.I. Joe, there's only one.
Only
there's
one shot.
Or two.
Yeah, exactly.
So it was much more of a challenge to, you can't really have $1 million shot in a movie no matter what. So you really had to find a way to build that one shot as economically as possible, even though you have all the costs of building a full-on CG character.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah, exactly. It's always different on paper and then what you end up doing. So a lot of tests, a lot of visuals for everybody to decide on which way to go. And
yeah,
that,
it's true, and it's true. I confess that I probably could have worked more closely with the next supervisor before we shot that shot. But in the heat of production, you just don't have much time to do that. And you run from one shot to the next, and it's hard to do it as planned as. In hindsight, would have looked like a good idea.
And then 6 weeks from the end, I hear you ask to blow up a satellite. Is it like?
That's right. Yeah, we had built these satellites for. They're sort of incidental to the story up to that point. The Cobra secret weapon are these satellites in space, and those are being built by. Company we were partying with in London, Reliance Media Works there, and all they had was a couple of sheets of artwork that were very quick paintings done by concept artists, very nice, very inspiring. So they spent months building this model, and as they built it, and as they started showing the details of their model and the intricacies of it and building mechanisms in the model that actually worked and would deliver the weapons. The production were astonished by how cool it was. It's like, wow, that looks amazing. And they went in for close-ups of different areas and it was really much more exciting than they expected. So and it got to the point where they were wondering how to climax for this part of the movie. They thought that the satellite could play a much bigger role. And in fact, it was just to blow up the satellites at the end, which is not something that was in the original scope of work at all. So it was an exciting challenge, and it's something that DD has done a lot of in the past. Again, it was a case where what do satellites blowing up in space look like? What do explosions thousands of miles in space look like? How would that look? How would gas expand? How would things burn? How would things be destroyed? And because all the explosions you've ever seen, well, even in movies like Star Wars and stuff, those are explosions that take place on Earth in the atmosphere. They're not realistic for space. I really wanted to make something that looked, that was plausible for an explosion in space. And, you know, the production backed me up and said, okay, let's see what you got. And finally, I think we came up with something that was pretty cool, that had flames that burned and then quickly dissipated, and the gases that were formed by that explosion ripped the satellite apart. We use a simulation technique we developed over many, many movies to break the satellite apart, to rip the pieces from each other, and then have them carry on in the airless, weightless momentum of space, just tumbling away. It looked amazing. We actually had anticipated having to augment the simulation with a lot of hero animation, you know, trying to make things look, and they went right by camera, or trying to hand animate stuff to make it look cool. But there's something about a million pieces of debris breaking apart and moving by the law of the physics that was just spectacular. And we had to add very little, you know, hero animation on top of that. Just the simulation was exciting and fun to look at and looked good from almost any point of view. So, it was a hard simulation, tremendous amount of computation, a lot of computers running for a long time, but there's something about trying to simulate reality that is very compelling to view and to see. It's like, oh, maybe that's what a satellite blowing up would look like. That's pretty cool. So it was a lot of fun, and it was a place to exert a little nerdiness along with artistic decisions as well.
Exactly. Wow. There's still you guys did an amazing job. There's still lots of sequences with the tank battle and the helicopters and the Cobra centers. But we won't have time to talk about all of them. But if I may, Thad, before we wrap up, are you still afraid of something on a film when you get on, when you read a script, or now we can almost do it all and. For example, on that film, what shot or sequence prevented you from sleeping, for example? Just one example, like one where you were like, oh my, how are we going to do this? Or is it all of them and you're generally feeling very stressed for 6 months?
No, it's all of it. I mean, I have to say that the visual effects supervisor is one guy in a team. And all I can do is, you know, hope for the best and try to direct the artistic team. But you never know what you're going to get. And, you know, TV is blessed with having tremendous talent in every respect. And so when you read a script, you never know what you're going to get. You kind of hope to direct this team to come up with solutions. And while you don't know what you're going to get, you know it's going to be good. And you know that if you get the right team together, they're going to create stuff that no one could have come up with on their own. You know, that nobody could, that it is a collaboration. And that's what makes movies worth watching. It's not just one guy's idea. It's, you see, you know, thousands of people working together and what they're very best at. And they compress all that talent and energy into a, you know, to an hour and a half film, and that's what makes a movie exciting.
Excellent.
So,
yeah.
I always stayed up late working on the movie. I didn't really stay up late worried about it.
Excellent. So before we wrap up, what are four movies that gave you the passion for movie making? If you can, you mention some still out of your mind? Like?
I'm 53. So that means it was Star Wars. You know, that was the first movie I saw that really inspired me to say, I want to do that.
Yeah.
And back in that era, you know, that was the first movie that had a real big computer component. And Star Wars, they weren't CG anything, but they were computer-controlled cameras and computer-controlled models. And I was like, I was really into computers when I was 16, you know.
Yeah.
And I think computers and movies should really work together. So, you know, I saw Star Wars, I saw a movie like Willow, which has a very early war stuff, and you do a much better job of that. So you know, those are the movies that really inspired me back in the late 70s and early 80s. I spent a long time trying to build tools that would enable to be possible in the visual effects of computers, and it was literally 10 years of doing research and work in television before we actually got to work on something as important as a motion picture, but it was definitely worth it. And, you know, clearly the dominance of computer assisted visual effects has shown that it wasn't the right path to be on.
Well, excellent. And thank you for your time, Thad, and a big thank you for being with us today. We wish you a good day and hope to talk to you soon.
All right, well, thank you very much.
All right, Thad, bye.
Bye-bye.
Okay, so that was Thad Beyer, visual effects supervisor for Digital Domain on G.I. Joe 2 Retaliation. It was Pascal from Art of VFX. See you next time.